Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it. It's a Monday Hail Varsity Radio. Colton Stone alongside Elijah Herbel. No Chris Schmidt today as he has been summoned for assignment to jury duty.
His civic duty.
Yeah, good for him. He's a good American, I guess. And so are we, as we are live on the wonderful airs of ESPN 1480 with Hail Varsity Radio. Like I said, Colton Stone alongside Elijah Herbel. Find us, follow us on Twitter at @2birds1stone, at Herbal Essences. And always follow Hail Varsity. Plenty of room for you this segment and a couple others throughout the show. So feel free if you have any questions, comments, concerns, just want to say what's up, find us on Twitter and do that. And we will get to as many as we can. You can always call 402-466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. As you told me, Elijah, the AC's out in here, so let's hope that I don't become a sweaty mess. And we just hold this thing together.
I think it's not really the AC out, just I'm here. I'm so sorry about that. I just about made Colton get water up his nose. I'm sorry
All
about
right.
that one.
And with that, no. plenty of stuff to talk about today as we continue rolling with fall camp for Husker football. Loaded up too as well. Parker Gabriel in about 15 minutes. We'll talk to Parker about practice so far, his thoughts, what he's seen, what he's heard, as well as some official news that we'll get into. Mondays with Charlie McBride at 5:06. So Charlie in just about an hour from now. He caught up with him in the second hour, as well as a documentary that's coming out with Blur Parties, as there will be Blur Parties at the Colorado game on the road. The 6th and the 7th are blocking off the street. It's going to be a redout in Boulder. We're going to talk to former IBAC and kick returner Josh Davis. He played from 99 to 2003, as well as his father that played for Nebraska as well. So we'll get caught up with him, talk a little bit about the day-by-day documentary, talk a little bit about the Blur Party event, and kind of just his time as a Husker and his involvement and what all that means, because you always hear that Husker football is that brotherhood, so kind of just what that means to Josh Davis. So it'll be great to get caught up with him, and plenty more. We'll fill the rest of the hour. But the first thing I wanted to get to, and I briefly hit on this last week, we had gotten a tweet about, you know, different packages that Nebraska could do on offense. You know, because we were talking about what could they do in the red zone, how will they use McCaffrey, which we'll talk to Parker about in his competition so far for the second spot. I think that's comfortable to say he's probably not pushing for the number one spot with Adrian Martinez as the quarterback. But we were kind of talking about, like, would you burn the red shirt to get McCaffrey out on the field earlier? And I'm kind of in the boat of, if it means you're going to score more points or win more games, yeah. I mean, you burn anybody's red shirt that you have to. But if it jeopardizes either his health or safety, or jeopardizes his ability to potentially be a backup quarterback, you know, break glass in case of emergency, then no, don't burn the red shirt. Play him in the four games to see what you can get out of him, because you have Vedrill, you have Bunch, you know, you have Martinez. I think you have enough quarterbacks to masker. But that doesn't defeat the purpose of what Derek Peterson on Hail Varsity, go read that article, kind of a column-style article from Derek Peterson on there. But the death lineup, as far as – and he set up the situation with
– the quote-unquote death lineup.
Right. Yeah, not quite the Warriors' death lineup by any means. But, yes, what he would consider a death lineup in the situation is 2nd and 5, because on 2nd and 5, you can pretty much do anything but, you know, probably punt the ball away, right? I suppose you could, but I don't know why you would. But I find it interesting, going back to that tweet, like using Wandale in a wildcat or like red zone formation. And my immediate thought was he's probably a little too small to, and now depending on the blocking scheme and who's in the backfield with him, you know, that could change it. But my initial thought was that he was too small, but a direct snap could work. You know, still line up with a true quarterback back there. That way, if something, you know, if it hits the fan, you have a, someone as a backup plan. But I could totally see lining up like Adrian Martinez at wide receiver on the 6-yard line. It's, again, as long as it keeps him healthy and safe, right? But I wanted your thought on this, Elijah, because I've kind of thought about it over the weekend and tried to think of, and now that Derek's written about it too, I've tried to think of like different things that the offense could do to make sure they don't, you know, create a trend of this is what the offense does every time they're in this lineup or this lineup. So I just wanted to pick your brain about that and kind of think what we could make up for different death lineups for the offense.
Well, Derek Peterson touched on the article, and the key is a lack of substitution from the offense.
Yeah.
If the offense comes out in a lineup, you can see how the defense is going to send personnel out there to respond to that lineup. So on first down, say, you could have Maurice Washington in your backfield. You could have your receivers be J.D. Spielman. You could have Wandale out there. Yeah. And then you could have the X receiver doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Mike Williams.
Yeah,
whoever's out there. That's the least expendable guy. I'm sorry, the least important guy in the lineup. The important three would be Wandale, J.D., and Maurice, as Derek said in his article, because those guys could all line up interchangeably.
Right.
Which really makes it tough on a defense. If on one play, you have Maurice Washington in the backfield, you have Wandale split out in the slot, you have J.D. Spielman way out wide. Mm-hmm. Next play you come out, Wandale's in the backfield, you have J.D. Spielman in the slot, you have Maurice Washington out wide. You're already creating headaches for the defense. Then you come out next play, no running back, and you shift, say, Wandale into the backfield and run a quick little dart play with Martinez. You're causing all sorts of issues, and the defense can never substitute because they're not going to have time with the hurry-up offense.
Yeah, and not to mention also the addition of having a tight end out there. And I know the example was Stoll. So, I mean, you can line up Stoll on one side where you have, you know, maybe you have trips receivers. Like you said, no one in the backfield. You have trips receivers, and then you also have a tight end. So now you have four receiver threats on one side, so you have to load up. And then if you send one guy in motion, all of a sudden, yeah, it throws that for a loop. It's one of those that – and I think we've said it kind of all summer, all spring. This team has enough talent and has enough – I don't want to say bodies, but a lot of it we haven't seen them play a college football game, right? So I think there's enough talent that you could throw any four guys out there, line them up in any way you want, and you'll find a way to make that work. I really think that's possible because you have so many different avenues you could go. You could, like you said, you could have three running backs out there, but two are lined up as receivers, and then they can all just interchange. Wandale, obviously, Mr. Football Kentucky as a running back, is probably going to take some of the carries anyways, but I think they kind of want to move him into like that J.D. Spielman type role. But with J.D. Spielman, that means you have Wandale to kind of do whatever you want.
D'Anthony Thomas type. If
right.
Anyone out there listened to or watched Oregon games back when Scott Frost was the offensive coordinator, think of what they did with D'Anthony Thomas, where on one play he's in the backfield, the next play he's split out wide and he's running a 9 route, and then he's running a screen the very next play, and then guess what? He's going to return punts for you too.
Yeah. Now, I'm actually curious about that too, because I remember Kranek said, this is probably about 2-3 weeks ago, when DeMornay Personnel played, everyone's like, ooh, we've got one guy like that, right? And now, you know, you can look at this roster and say, you've got a bunch of DeMornay Personnels, right? I'm curious to see who's going to be the punt returner, if it's any of those guys, right? I don't know who you'd throw back there.
Spielman's the incumbent, but I wouldn't be shocked if Frost wanted to get him a rest on that play and not risk his future health.
Yep, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
Especially with so many weapons they have.
Do you throw a younger guy out there? Not because it's like, if he gets hurt, we're fine. Not like that type, but like, yeah, you want to keep
somebody who's capable who might not otherwise get the snaps.
Exactly. You want to keep your veteran healthy too, because I think it was Derek or Brandon that mentioned like JD. You look at JD Spielman. You have a guy that's a couple injuries away from almost back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. So I mean, if you can get that out of him, like think about if you would have gotten 1,000 and 1,000 out of Spielman and Morgan. I mean, that's basically what they're doing. You got to try to keep that guy healthy if that's how many yards you think you can get out of him. But Not that we need to, like, who's going to be the punt returner? Like, let's get into that now. But I'll be intrigued because, obviously, the name of the Frost offense game is don't be predictable, right? And like you said, if you can't substitute as the defense, there's no way to combat it. And that kind of comes back to my point with Luke McCaffrey and whether you keep his red shirt or burn it is you could line up with two quarterbacks out on the field, and on one play, you could do this with Vedrill too, you could do it with Bunch, whoever. You line up with two quarterbacks out on the field, and you could literally change your quarterback in that scenario. You could do it with a running back too. You could, like I said, a direct snap, maybe a wildcat type situation. But I'll be really intrigued what they come up with because they have so much talent, we just haven't seen it yet. And of course, we aren't in practice. We don't know what they're running. We don't know if they're even worried about, you know, these matchup nightmares yet. But you got to think it's something that they're working on behind closed doors.
Scott Frost is one of the best offensive minds in college football. It's arguable, but I think Nebraska fans and people who are listening to the show will agree. Scott Frost, one of the best offensive minds in college football. And I think he's really going to come out and he's just going to try to confuse defenses, and he's going to try to get those plays where you can tell pre-snap, all right, we got this right here, and it's going to work. Something I see happening is we bring in bigger personnel. You get stolen at tight end. Get Martinez in the pistol with, say, Dedrick Mills behind him trying to power run it on 3rd-and-1, 3rd-and-2. Pick up the first down. Leave that same personnel out there. You don't let the defense substitute. And now you can split out Jack Stoll as more of a receiver. You can bring Dedrick Mills out of the backfield. And now you have brought in a defense who's probably brought in a bigger lineup for 3rd-and-short. And now you're spreading them out on 1st-and-10. And I can see a lot of stuff like that happening. Or the flip side, you get a smaller lineup in on 1st-and-10 expecting a throw. You get it to 3rd-and-short. And you can use that same lineup to then power run it down a throat. Down the defense's throat, excuse me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really going to be... It's giving me a headache just thinking about what they could do because you really don't know. And I don't know, it's all speculation, but you've got to think that in some part of the imagination, that's definitely what they're doing. And if it wasn't already built in, maybe they were going to try to do things like that last year and the talent just didn't develop quite yet. Maybe they, you know, it's just one of those that you kind of have to wait till you have the guys to do it. Oregon had the guys to do it, so they did it. I mean, it just worked. And, you know, they had a developed quarterback, and that's kind of what Nebraska has now. They have a developing but a pretty solid developed quarterback, and now they're starting to get the pieces that fall into line. Yeah, there's still a bunch of question marks. Yeah, we haven't seen a lot of these guys play yet, but you're confident enough that because of who's under center, the rest will fall into place. And I think that's fair to say.
I would even go as far as to say that in some cases this season, it's not going to matter who's in just because of the scheme. Scott Frost puts his guys in a position to succeed just based on the scheme alone, where you can come out on a formation, you can have a certain play, where if you are confident that one guy can beat a defender on that field, it opens up the scheme for every other guy in the field. Mm-hmm. Where it could be me out there playing receiver, and I think I could get open. And that's what Scott Frost's offense brings to the table.
Yeah, and I think it may have been you and I that talked about it, but it's the kind of offense that thrives on like eight guys getting the ball in the game. Like it's not going to be or more, right? It's not going to be like you're going through the box score and it's like, okay, rushing yards, two guys, receiving, four guys, and then like that's it. Plus, and then throwing Martinez, so like seven guys total. Like it's going to be a box score where there's going to be guys in the backfield. You know, whether it's Mills, Washington, Wandale, Spielman, Mike Williams, whoever, Miles Jones, like it'll be a list of five to six guys that probably have rushed the ball and then a list of six to eight guys that also caught the ball. Yes, some of those names will repeat again, but that's the whole point of this offense is, you know, send any four, five, you know, let's say five guys out there, including if you want to include a tight end, and let them run wild. Like just give them a play and it should probably work out. Like I think that's reasonable. And you're right. It's not an offense that you have to be, you know, a college football Hall of Famer to succeed in. But that also means you probably aren't going to have a lot of guys that have 1,000 yards. You might have a lot of guys that are 350, 400. But you need those kinds of guys because if you have eight or nine of them, and then, you know, five to six of those kind of guys that have 300 to 500 yards, and then you have one guy that's 800 to 1,000, your offense is probably looking pretty okay.
Peyton Manning said in his detail segment on ESPN Plus, I'm not sure if you've gotten a chance to watch
that. No, I have not.
But he said in there that for every defense, there is a correct play to beat that defense. There's always, for whatever the defense gives you, there's always a play that can beat that defense. And the key is the communication between Frost, Martinez, the offensive people up in the box, making sure that everyone knows this is the play we have to get in to beat this defense right now. And I think with Martinez at the helm, it doesn't really matter who else is on the field as long as you can get them the ball with the correct play in mind.
Yeah, and of course the other piece of this is making sure you have the correct blocking scheme and you've got plenty of time to run the plays and everything. But I think you're right. I think you have enough trust in the guy wearing the headset and the guy under center that they will get the right formation or play called. And then on top of that, they will also get the right read or audible called if they really need it. I think whether you're fan, media, player, opposing coach, like, you have to be either really excited or really concerned about what this kind of offense can do. So it'll be interesting to see what Frost devises. Coming up with the Lincoln Journal star, Parker Gabriel, next, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Rolling on a Monday, Hail Varsity Radio, Colton Stone alongside Elijah Herbal. Find us, follow us on Twitter at @2birds1stone, @herbalessences, as well as @HailVarsity. Joining us from the Lincoln Journal Star, find him on Twitter @HuskerExtraPG, is Parker Gabriel. Parker, how are you this wonderful Monday?
I'm doing good, guys. How are you guys doing?
We're all right. We're floating on. We're getting by. Parker, a little bit of news on a Monday is we have an official update on Jakeem Green as he is joining the Huskers. We knew he was committing, but we weren't quite sure when he'd be able to join the team. Thoughts were maybe over the weekend. What can you tell us about Jakeem Green and maybe what your expectations for this season for him might be?
Yeah, the expectations part, I think, is tough at this point, but let's start with what we know, which is a spokesman at Nebraska confirmed today to the Journal Star that Jakeem Green, he got admitted to school. We knew that all his transcripts were in. We knew that nobody was really concerned about whether he was going to have the grades or not, and people thought that he was in good shape, and he was. He got admitted. He got to Lincoln on Sunday last night and signed his tender. So he's officially part of the team now. So he's in. Now the next steps before he practices, every player, before they're cleared to be on the field playing or practicing, has to pass a physical and a conditioning test, a beep test. So basically he's got to do those things. Nebraska thinks that it's possible that by tomorrow late in the day when they have a walkthrough, they practice in the morning, but perhaps by their stuff later in the afternoon, he'll be cleared to join the action. And if not, then it's certainly possible that he'll be cleared and on the field for practice on Wednesday morning.
So, yeah, not so much expectations maybe for the season for him, but I guess, looking at that defensive line and kind of seeing like what kind of bodies there are for the defense. It's not necessary that he's got to be on the field as soon as possible. Of course, that's probably what the team would like. But I guess it's more of as long as he does clear. I guess what do you see his role maybe being on that side of the ball?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see because it's one thing to pass the conditioning test and it's another to be in game shape, and tomorrow is practice number 10 for Nebraska, and they've got 20. They've got 20 what I would call camp practices before game week starts. So, after tomorrow, the camp portion of August is halfway over, and so to me, it seems like a steep learning curve to get in and be able to do enough in 10 practices plus a game week. To just jump right in week one against South Alabama, especially because, if there's a position where Nebraska has bodies, it's on the defensive line. But I think that, you know, if you're DeAndre Thomas or you're Ben Stilley or, you know, even the Davis brothers, if you're a defensive end, Casey Rogers, vying for time on Nebraska's defensive line, Jakeem Green is just going to bring more competition. He's got a redshirt year available. I don't know. I have no idea whether, you know, he's destined for that or not. But the nice thing is they can theoretically work him in slowly. He could play in up to four games, redshirt, and still have 2 years available. If he is the kind of player, if right away he's the kind of player Nebraska thinks he can be, perhaps he finds a way into the rotation. I mean, he's 6'5" and 305 pounds. He's athletic. He's got a different build than most of the guys that they have on the roster right now. So it's very interesting, and at the very least, it's another piece of the puzzle in terms of competition for Tony Tuioti in that defensive line.
Parker Gabriel with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Parker, sticking with that defensive side of the ball, Frost mentioned as he met with the media last week that the offense had a pretty good week, but they did have one day that they kind of had a lot of turnovers, which may have just been the defense kind of balling out on their own accord. But taking away from that and knowing what that offensive is capable of, like what's your takeaway from that defense putting a lot of pressure on such what we think is going to be a high-powered offense?
Yeah, I think it's obviously what you want. In camp, it's always the tug and pull of, well, is the defense getting good pressure? Hey, that's great. Should you be concerned about the offensive line? Or if Adrian Martinez is operating from a perfectly clean pocket and they're, you know, ripping off big chunk after big chunk on the ground, like, does that speak well of the offense or poorly of the defense? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I try not to put too much stock in that either way. I think the thing that you feel good about if you're a Nebraska fan is that it's very clear that Scott Frost and the coaching staff like the competition level overall. And that's really what you want. I mean, you know, take that scrimmage on Sunday, for example. If it was as competitive as what you sort of, you know, what you hear talking to people and all that, that's, I think, the best thing you can say about it is if it was clean and you got out of it healthy and the competitive level overall was high, that's what you're looking for at this time of year.
Parker Gabriel with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Parker, Travis Fisher and a portion of that defense that people are pretty, you know, maybe not 100% about, but you feel pretty confident about, is that secondary. You've got a lot of guys returning as well as a group of young pups coming in that look already kind of like they're college athletes coming out of, you know, right out of high school. They're 18-year-olds. But looking at that secondary, what does that group of young guys bring to this core, as well as maybe just even if it's not at a getting on the field kind of level as much as just competing and making the guys in front of them better?
Yeah, I think you got exactly right. I mean, I think it's all about competition. You know, last week had a long talk with DiCaprio Boodle about just that, and that, you know, he really praised the four freshmen for coming in ready to play and ready to compete. And it's one thing to be highly recruited and have your coach say nice things about you, you know, but it's another to show up in the summer and understand what it actually takes and go through the conditioning, you know, strength and conditioning program and succeed at that, you know, and really push for playing time. And you get the sense talking to Travis Fisher and talking to some of the veteran defensive backs that this is a young group that accepted that challenge and sort of got right to it. And so it'll be very interesting. I think the odds are that at least one of them, and perhaps more, finds their way into enough playing time that they don't redshirt. I don't know if all four of them will, or if it'll be three or two or one or what. And it's a little bit hard to pin even like which one it would be. I think Noah Pola-Gates' versatility, you know, puts him in a position where if you can do a little bit of everything, you can do a lot, you know, especially as it pertains to the secondary. Quinton Newsome, I think in Quentin Newsom's most direct route to playing a lot this year at corner probably is an injury situation, which, of course, nobody wants, but it does happen. And so, you know, I just think that they feel good about that group, not only as the future of the secondary, but as reinforcements and competition for playing time as soon as this fall.
Parker, speaking of young guys trying to get some playing time on that defense, Garrett Nelson is a guy who's been making some waves on social media. The Huskers Twitter account posted a video of him getting a sack from that Sunday scrimmage yesterday. What are his odds for getting some playing time this next year?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. And you know, Javon DeWitt, the outside linebackers coach at the beginning of camp, alluded to Garrett Nelson maybe being able to work his way into a situational role. If that's what it is, you know, if it's a few snaps here and there, they might weigh the benefit of a redshirt year. At the same time, if he's on the top unit for, you know, a special teams unit or multiple special teams units, maybe he'll blow right past that four games. And, you know, being a core special teams player and a situational player on defense, that's a pretty significant role for a true freshman. So we'll see. The thing that's interesting to me is that outside linebackers group, there seems to me to be a lot of variance in the possible outcomes for the year. You know, if JoJo Doman and Tyron Ferguson are healthy all year, which neither of them have been healthy for a full season in quite a while, but if both of them have healthy, productive years and Alex Davis takes a step forward, a big step forward in his game, and Caleb Tanner makes that year one to year two jump that people think he can make, if all of those things line up, there might not be a lot of snaps there for a guy like Garrett Nelson. But if they have injury problems at that position, which they have in a significant way each of the past 2 years, or if a guy doesn't take that jump that you think, then there might be more meat on the bone there for a guy like that to take advantage of an opportunity. So I think the defensive role probably will remain to be seen for a while here. But I certainly think that given just where Garrett Nelson's at physically at this sort of early stage in his career, I think that there's opportunity there for him to find his way onto the field, whether it's special teams or on the defense.
Parker, about 90 seconds. Hopefully this is enough time. It's kind of, I don't want to say a long question, but reading your story about McCaffrey and kind of the praise he's gotten from Verduzco, how well he did on that incredibly long test for quarterbacks. And I guess, what are your thoughts on that praise from McCaffrey as him coming in as a freshman and knowing who some of the other quarterbacks are? And then maybe the idea of him finding his way onto the field and potentially burning that red shirt.
Yeah, I think the clear plan with Luke McCaffrey is to redshirt him if they can. I mean, it would take a major injury to Adrian Martinez for Nebraska to consider burning Luke McCaffrey's redshirt. I mean, I think it's pretty much that simple. It would take a very bad situation for Luke McCaffrey to play in more than four games this year. At the same time, I think they're really high on his potential and is just overall just the package of him being one of the best athletes on the team, on the entire team, and also picking up the playbook as well as he has, that leads you to believe that not only will he see the field in some way, shape, or form in the right moment this year, he can play in up to four games without losing his redshirt, but also it tells you a little bit about how high they are on him as a quarterback going into the future. I mean, that package, you know, a dynamic, explosive athlete combined with being as astute, you know, intellectually and playbook-wise as he is, like that's exactly what Nebraska's looking for in a quarterback. And so I think they're really happy with the early returns on Luke McCaffrey, but there's not a shred of doubt that the plan is to redshirt him this fall.
That's Parker Gabriel from the Lincoln Journal-Star. Find him on Twitter at HuskerExtraPG and read him on journalstar.com. Parker, thanks for joining us today.
Yep, see you, crouton.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, chris@hailvarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Big thanks to Parker Gabriel from the Lincoln Journal-Star for joining us. Coming up, it's
Charlie McBride in about, let's do some math, 25 minutes. And then a little less than an hour away, Josh Davis, former Husker, and joining us talking about that day-by-day documentary as well as the Blur Party, Colton Stone alongside Elijah Herbal. Find us, follow us on Twitter, shoot us your questions, comments, concerns. We will answer whatever questions you may have at Two Birds, One Stone, at Herbal Essences, and as always, follow at Hail Varsity. So Elijah, this is something that you and I had talked about off air a little bit, and it's an interesting situation. I know we've talked about like what your opinions on the whole transfer market are, what mine are. I don't think it ever become free agency, but I think there is a fine line of what is acceptable and what may be too much, and there's always the questions of who gets eligibility immediately, who doesn't. I'm thinking of the one I remember. I read the tweet. I don't remember his name, but there was a guy that transferred recently so he could play in front of his grandfather who was sick, and they did not grant him immediate eligibility. But anybody else has left and pretty much been given – I wouldn't say everybody else, but if you're a high-quality name going into a big market, it seems like you kind of just get eligibility. So it breeds that question of, is transferring worth it?
And I think what we're going for here is the Tate Martell story.
Yep.
So I want to kind of preview for anyone who doesn't know the Tate Martell story, Tate Martell's background as a quarterback. In 2012, in middle school, he committed to the University of Washington. Which
I didn't even know that, to be honest.
3 years later, entering high school, he decommits from the University of Washington, and later that year commits to Texas A&M. The next year, still in high school, he says the quarterbacks at Texas A&M are ass. So he said that.
Is that a quote?
That's a
direct
quote.
Direct quote.
Later that year, he decommits from Texas A&M, and then he commits to Ohio State University. In 2017, he enrolls at Ohio State University. But after 1 year, his redshirt season, Justin Fields transfers in. And he can't take it. He talks more trash. I think this time it was on Twitter, was it?
Yeah, maybe it sounds right. Yeah.
And so Justin Fields comes to Ohio State from Georgia, and Tate Martell goes, okay, I don't want this competition. I'm going to transfer to Miami, where I can be an instant starter. And today the news came out that he lost the quarterback race. He is the number two quarterback. So the question is, what's next? Is he going to find another school? I mean, he's clearly been jumping around. He got the instant eligibility this time around. I doubt he'll get it again.
Yeah, because someone tweeted that. Like, does he transfer again now? I think the scenario would be that if he were to transfer now, he'd still be able to roll in classes, and he'd be able to get into a school. He would just have to sit this year out. So it's kind of, you know, redshirt year part two, basically. I mean, he'd still have 3 years of eligibility. Right now he has four, obviously. But the really interesting thing about that scenario, too, is that so it was a three-way battle between, you know, I guess he's technically a redshirt sophomore, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Tate Martell, and then you have sophomore Nikosi Perry, and then you have the freshman that did win the job, and I'm spacing on his name. Something Hill, maybe? I don't remember. But so you then are not only losing, and I think Perry may have been a transfer too, if I remember correctly, but you're not only losing the job to another guy that you figured, like, oh, if I don't get it immediately, like, I'll be right in the thick of it for it, to now losing a guy who's a true freshman. So it's just like...
it seems like if he stays at Miami, unless he comes out... and this guy has a bad first couple of games or something like that, he is going to be stuck behind this guy for as long as he's at Miami.
Yeah.
Assuming this guy can retain the starting job.
Right, exactly. Assuming that he stays healthy or
The quarterback
efficient.
That won the job is Darren Williams. Or sorry, Jaren Williams.
That's right, okay. I knew it was kind of a basic last name, so it wasn't too hard to remember. But that's the thing is, like, you know, I did not know he had committed to so many schools, but I guess that kind of explains his situation. Now, he is kind of the outlier. He's, by most accounts, is an outlier because, one, most kids aren't committing to a school in middle school, so I think Washington should have seen that coming. Most people don't then commit to another school just to trash them and then decommit again and then commit, and then once you're finally in that school, nah, I'm out.
Like, it's just, it's really, that's really weird.
And I feel for the kid, though, because you look at that, and he's been told since he was in sixth grade that you're the next great hope. You're going to come to Washington, you're going to be our starting quarterback. You're going to come to Texas A&M, you're going to be our starting quarterback. You're going to come to Ohio State, you're going to be our starting quarterback. He gets to college, and he realizes he has to fight for a job, which he probably hasn't had to do since middle school.
Yeah.
And then whenever he loses the job, he goes, well, what am I going to do now? Because he's been told for years upon years upon years that he is the guy. And now he's has to learn that he has to fight for it. And I get it. It's tough. But at the same time, I think he would have been better off staying at Ohio State and fighting for that job.
Yeah, it's a situation where, and I think we've talked about this, that, going into college, well, one, and this isn't on the coaches. It's just how recruiting works. Like, you're telling 25 to 50 guys that, like, you're the next fill in the blank that will help us win these games. Now, that's not necessarily a lie by any means. It's just that, you may be a guy that they're saying that to, and there's a better receiver that they're like, we really want this guy, but if we can get them both, like, we'll take them both, right? So it's not so much on the coaches. That's just what recruiting is. Like, you want – now, it's a different story when it starts in middle school, like you said. So that's a whole nother thing. But you look at Ohio State, and I found this tweet interesting. Let me pull it up. From Jonathan Arnholz. He said, this is his tweet. So Tate Martell leaves Ohio State for Miami because Justin Fields was going to steal his starting spot, but now Martell is stuck as a backup again, and Fields might not even win the starting spot at Ohio State because of a guy who couldn't win the starting job at Kentucky. So I'm not, and now that's obviously not a given. Ohio State hasn't named their quarterback. They probably won't until the week of game one.
And I believe it'll still be Fields.
I think it, and if it's not, it's more of a, let's test both guys out while we can, instead of like, let's just throw them out there and hope everything works out.
I think the main reason this stuff's coming out is just so he doesn't get complacent, Fields. So he doesn't get complacent thinking, I'm the starter, I can rest easy. No, you're a new guy coming in. You got to work your tail off every single day.
Yeah, and it's Ohio State. So the expectations for a quarterback at Ohio State, now not that it wouldn't be high at Miami, but are obviously very high at Ohio State compared to what they just had. So you're going from a lot of guys that had a lot of experience. I mean, you're talking about Dwayne Haskins. You're talking about JT Barrett. You're talking about Braxton Miller. You're talking about, I know I'm forgetting one. Well, Terrell Pryor was there. So you're talking about like a history of guys that were starters for, Haskins being a little bit of an outlier, starters for 2+ years, if not more. So it's not a job that you can walk in and, feel safe with the position that you have. So I do think Fields game one will probably be the starter, but if he's not, I think it's more of a, let's kind of see what we got while we can test it out on the field. I think that that's just what Ryan Day and Ohio State are going to try to do. So Hail Varsity rolls on a Monday, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time this hour, hour one, Colt Stone alongside Elijah Herbal for Hail Varsity Radio. Find us, follow us on Twitter at @2birds1stone, at Herbal Essences, as well as Hail Varsity on Twitter. Something's got to stop that motion, and airbags usually aren't enough. Do you want it to be a seatbelt or the windshield? Seatbelts prevent excessive injury when your vehicle and your body need to slow down in a hurry. This applies whether you're in the driver's seat, passenger seat, or back seat. Buckle up now. Click it or ticket from the Department of Traffic Highway Safety Office. Elijah, I'm going to say this to you, and I just want your immediate clean for the FCC and radio waves opinion. There are reports that Dak Prescott has turned down a $30 million a year in favor of trying to seek out a $40 million per year contract.
If I was him, I'd sit out with Zeke. if you want $40 million, you're okay. 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 $40 million for Dak Prescott. Okay.
Yeah.
He's not even a top 10 quarterback in the league.
Yeah. So here's.
That's top one quarterback money there. $40 million a year.
Oh, no. Yeah. That's top. I mean, you could even say two. Like, but even then, like, that's not Dak Prescott. Here's my thing about it. I guess maybe if you backload the contract. But my thing about it is, and people are up in arms. Now, I am of the campaign that you don't pay Zeke. Now, you pay Zeke, but you don't pay him top running back money. Simply because, not because he's not a top running back by any means, I don't know how much of it is him. I don't know how much of it's their offensive line. And I don't know how much of it is going to last much longer. And that's always my thing about running backs. The thing is you can get rookie running backs on the cheap. Like, you can find guys that can run behind an offensive line. Are they going to be Ezekiel Elliott? Maybe not. Are they going to be Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell, Kareem Hunt, fill in the blank? Maybe not. But you can find guys that can do that job to some extent for, you know, maybe not right away, but that talent is out there. Like, it exists. You can find guys that are cheaper than I don't know how much Zeke's trying to get a year, but I agree that you do pay your quarterback, your franchise quarterback, air quotes there, franchise quarterback before you pay any running back, but 40 mil is a lot.
I just think longevity in the NFL for a running back is
non-existent.
So just back to Zeke. But with the quarterback, it is. If you think Dak is going to be the guy in 5 years, maybe you pay him now just so you can keep him around. Mm-hmm. With Zeke, I mean, do you know the top five rushing leaders from 5 years ago? Do you know who number one was 5 years ago? If you had to throw out a wild guess.
Zeke?
It's not. It's DeMarco Murray.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go.
Number two was LeSean McCoy.
Yep.
Number three, Le'Veon Bell, who is still putting in.
I guess this is Zeke's fifth year, so that wouldn't have made sense.
I mean, of the top five guys, three of them aren't even over on a roster. DeMarco Murray, I think, is retired now.
Yeah, I think he's done.
Marshawn Lynch was number four, and is he still on the Raiders?
He's probably that weird, like, I'm kind of not retired, but like, hey, if you need me to run the ball, like, I will.
Number five, Matt Forte, out of the league.
Yep.
Number six, Alfred Morris, who's fighting for a camp spot.
I think he's on the Cowboys.
He's on the Cowboys?
If I remember correctly.
So, I mean, but still, NFL longevity for running back, just over to Zeke. I mean, get your money now, I guess, but at the same time, I can see why you don't want to pay a running back.
Yeah, that's the thing is if you're going to get your money as a running back, get it while you're productive, but not everybody's going to be Adrian Peterson, and not everybody's going to make it that long.
Most guys are lucky as a running back to have a three-year peak.
Yep, exactly. And Zeke is kind of, you know, is he running out of his window? I don't know. I guess we'll see, but funny money may be thrown around in Jerry World. Charlie McBride next on Hail Varsity Radio.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome back. Hour two on a Monday of Hail Varsity Radio. Chris Schmidt serving his civic duty on the juries of Lincoln, Nebraska. Colton Stone alongside Elijah Herbal. Find us, follow us on Twitter at @2birds1stone, at Herbal Essences, as well as always at Hail Varsity. And joining us, it's Black Shirt Mondays with the coach, the defensive coordinator, the brilliant mind of the defense, Charlie McBride. Charlie, it's a hot one right now, and our AC is not kicking. Hopefully, you're doing a little better on your side of the country.
Yeah, we're doing better. It's cool in the 70s and a little overcast, but it's been good to us. He's not in jail, is he? He's just being on it. Yeah, I've heard that. Guys say, well, I'm on jury duty. Yeah, I got jury duty. You're going to sit there and watch the jury.
Well, hopefully we aren't having to go bail them out anytime soon. I guess that's all. We've got our fingers crossed for that one. But
yeah,
So you've got football weather is what you're telling me, Coach. Because
yeah, it's great. Yeah. I mean, it really is. I think the high school start this weekend here up in this area or next week maybe. Yeah, next weekend.
Yeah, I know.
It's getting close.
Yeah, practice kicking off for college, kicking off for high school, and it's almost here. We only have to wait a little bit more, and we've got real football once again, right?
Yeah, high school start a little earlier up here than they have in the past. They start in other states. They start a week before school starts even.
Mondays with Charlie McBride with us. Charlie, the first thing I wanted to hit on, as Scott Frost addressed the media on Friday, he was talking about
when Tom Osborne got mad, if he got mad at a play or mad in practice, his famous line was "Dadgummit," and that's how you knew you messed up. I just wanted to get a story of T.O. getting mad, or did people try to see if they could to get a swear word out of T.O. in practice or the game?
Well, if they did, everybody probably would have clapped, you know. I mean, it was, you know, there's been times when we thought maybe we caught them, but we didn't. We couldn't prove it, so we just kept our mouths shut, you know. But normally what you have to do is if you're in trouble, I think probably the basic thing to know is see if his face is getting red and the veins in his neck are starting to pop out. If they are, then you need to move your feet and get ready for it, because it'll be there. And Tom's not been there's been times when he's gotten pretty boisterous with the players. I know, especially with the defense, I know that they can handle it a little better because that's what they're getting at practice. The offensive guys are, you know, more, I guess, calm down a little bit, have to think where defensive guys can fly around, and as long as they know what they're doing, they're okay. But offensive linemen, for example, have to change blocks at the line of scrimmage and things like that, and it's not a good idea to really, you know, try to get them emotionally involved too much. I mean, they, except for the physical and part of it, but the mental part is the most important thing for an offensive lineman during the game. And of course, you know, the word that I know Coach Tenneper, he always liked to say, I'd like to get a bunch of offensive linemen with defensive temperaments. so there you go, you know. And I think, you know, in the times when we've been good, that's kind of been the case.
Charlie McBride with us, Mondays with Charlie. Sticking with that defensive side of the ball and kind of what Frost was hitting on this week, he talked about both sides of the ball had good first seven practices, as he addressed the media, but he did hit on defense winning in practice one day, forcing a lot of turnovers. And in your experience, you've got to think that, and we asked Parker this, it's kind of one of those, is the defense pushing the offense and that's why they're getting better, or is it, you know, is it showing a good sign that the defense isn't in a good spot, or is the offense lacking, or vice versa? So just kind of your thoughts on one side of the ball dominating in a practice.
Well, what's going to happen is, and usually when we were in a 20-day session in the spring, they don't have that kind of practice anymore. We were able to, you know, see it switch. It had changed. Like we had two scrimmages a week, one on Wednesday, one on Saturday, usually, and usually one would win one day, and then you can count on the others winning the next time. It was just, we could see the mental part of it taking over because they didn't want to get beat two times in a row or something like that. And, you know, so it was a situation that we kind of kept an eye on. But the thing, too, is I think the defense a lot of times early in the year is going to be a little bit ahead. They have the ability to fly around a little bit, and the offense is really concentrating on their, you know, their plays and their footwork and things like that. And as they get better, then they'll start getting, you know, they'll start taking over. And I think it starts balancing out. You know, about the time the year starts, you know, I think it balances out pretty good. But right now, early, and the same thing in spring practice, the defense is usually ahead of the offense.
Frost touched on this too, Charlie, about their guys were maybe a little too reckless, a little too flying around in practice. But he said he'd rather have that than guys they've got to tell to speed up. How important is it to have guys that you'd rather tell to calm down than to pick up the pace?
I'd rather have guys to calm down, but yet, you know, there's all kinds of different kinds of players. There's some that are boisterous and really play hard, and there's some that are real quiet and really play hard. You know, so it's all different. I think each player, as a coach, you kind of have to learn your position, the temperaments of your position people, whether it be how you instruct them, whether it's, you know, yelling or screaming or whatever. And some of them, you just, you know, talk to them and whisper at them, and you don't yell at them and, you know, in front of other people. They don't like it. Some guys love it. You know, it makes them move, and they'll tell you, you know, that keep it going, coach. It fires me up, you know, and so that's a whole different thing. And so you need to try to find out what each one does. I think the important thing is, as far as the mental aspect between the two of them, I've coached both sides of the ball. And so I think that the thing is that they get a camaraderie with each other. In other words, the offensive line and defensive lines, for example, they're the most frequent because they're banging each other every day. I mean, they're, you know, within breathing distance of each other. And they're usually the guys that come around first. And that's the thing that I think is important. I think that the guys that are flying around and things, that you can slow them down a little bit. And if they fly around and know what they're doing, well, that's when you really have a good football team.
Money's with Charlie. Charlie McBride with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Charlie, we talked to a longtime assistant, and of course he's the player personnel right now on the current staff, but Ron Brown last week, and kind of what you're hitting on with, you guys used to have the Wednesdays and Saturdays when for practice, but then turning that into a game week. Coach Brown was talking about that competition in practice, and mm-hmm. the harder you go in practice, you know, the more fun Saturdays could be.
Right.
Kind of touch on that, and like what you expect as far as a competition level. That way, Saturday feels like the easy part.
Well, I think it's a competition level, but they've been in competition through the whole preseason and everything, and that just carries over. I mean, they're gonna do the best they can. The important thing during the season that I really felt was is that we get to game speed, and we recognize that if you the scout team will never give you the kind of speed you're gonna see in a game. But your first units against each other and your second units against each other. Will give you that speed factor that sometimes they don't, other schools that don't do that don't get a chance to really, you know, settle down into you know, the game speed. Game speed is an important thing. I think a lot of people don't realize that in practice. And again, it's a matter of, you know, how you conduct it, but we protected each other. I think that was important. We were aggressive. I mean, there was no fooling around. I mean, but you never cut anybody, you know, low blocked anybody, or you didn't, you know, throw the backs down on the ground or stuff like that. And, you know, if you have a back stopped, a lot of guys, if you watch a pro game, they'll continue to until they throw the guy either out of bounds or on the ground. And usually if we had a guy wrapped up, that was it. You know, we just didn't continue to try to drill them into the ground or anything like that. We try to protect each other, but yet play as hard as we could. On the goal line now, when we got our goal line live, we had some few plays with each unit on the goal line. That's war. I mean, you know, that's just like a game. That is a war, and that's really, really competition because you're, you know, you're starting on maybe the 3-yard line and first down. And so it was, you know, the thing that was bad about us when we did it was Coach Osborne was the official, and they seemed to score all the time, even if they didn't make it to the goal line. so we just kind of laughed it off. But it's important, I think, that they get that feeling of that speed during the week, and it really improved our football team when we started doing that.
Charlie McBride with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Charlie, a lot of stuff coming out of practice last week from the coaching staff, including Frost himself, saying how much fun he was having coaching this team and how much the guys loved coming out to practice and competing with each other. How much does that directly factor into wins in the next season?
Oh, that's important. I mean, you know, the attitude about the players is really, really an important thing to have. I think if you got a bunch of guys moping around and, you know, it doesn't look like there's a lot of enthusiasm and stuff like that, I think you're asking for problems. I think one thing is when they do it in practice, they want to do it. You'll see them step up in a game and even do it better than practice. And again, it's I emphasize the same thing: take care of each other. You know, don't be afraid to hit the guy. I mean, you're gonna have a live thing. If you get a shot, you're gonna do it. But you know, be sure it's clean and be sure you're not, you know, going after knees or anything like that. You know, you get carried away with that kind of stuff. And so you can't do that every day. I mean, that's not healthy. I mean, you get to some points during the season when you got a bunch of guys that are dinged up a little bit and you maybe not even have that period at all because of it. I don't remember us not having it, but, you know, you hold a lot of guys out that may be, you know, trying to get them ready, you know, for the week. So, you know, even your starting quarterback may not even be in there because he's got a little problem with an ankle or something like that. So, you know, it wasn't always the ones against ones, and you're putting your guys that are hurting out there. You don't do that. But it makes a big difference, I think, when you have fun. If you don't have fun playing, I mean, it's, you know, I think it's a combination of the coaches and the players' attitudes combining and having fun. You know, if you got a stiff coach, you're probably going to have a bunch of stiff players. But I think as time goes on, I think coaches start to loosen up a little bit. And I don't remember, all our guys were, you know, they were having fun and things like that. And especially with the competition, even the coaches, you know, would get after each other once in a while. I mean, not a fight or anything like that, but, you know, and the players knew that, you know, you had their back, and I think that was the important thing that came out of it.
Charlie McBride with us, Mondays with Charlie on Hail Varsity Radio. Charlie, just about a minute or 90 seconds here. The Huskers get an official arrival by Jakeem Green. He is officially on the team. He has to just pass the physical so he can practice. But that increases their defensive line depth. In your experience, like how important is it to have not just bodies on that defensive line, but guys that you can throw into the fire right away?
You know, I think the biggest thing is if you throw them into the fire and they don't know what they're doing, and they, you know, a lot of times, like, here's a guy coming in, he doesn't even know any players. He probably knows maybe five or six guys, but he doesn't even know the players. They don't know, you know, what he's like, and it goes both ways. You know, most of the guys that come in junior college want to go into the NFL, and if they're good enough, they'll do it. But I remember having a guy named Henry Waxter, and everybody that was recruiting him told him they could start for him, and I told Henry, you can't start for us because you're not strong enough right now and you need a year, and I'll guarantee you you'll get your degree if you take a redshirt year. And so sometimes that comes out of it, you know. But nowadays, with the way the NFL is set up, that's pretty hard to do. Most of the guys were staying in school for the full duration when I was coaching. I mean, it got to a point where there were a few of them that were coming out, but not like they do now. I mean, it's almost like they're, you know, 2 years and out, and that's it. And it's a shame because, you know, they talk about money. You're putting money into a guy that is going to leave you, and you don't know how it'll turn out with your football team, because if a bunch of guys leave, it'll change your whole structure, your team, and everything like that, and it's kind of hard on the coaches.
Mondays with Charlie McBride. Charlie, we will talk to you next Monday. Enjoy your football weather.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for having me.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Big thanks to Charlie McBride. Last segment, Colton Stone alongside Elijah Herbal. Find us, follow us on Twitter at @2birds1stone, at Herbal Essences. And as always, follow Hail Varsity at Hail Varsity on Twitter. Joining us, a member of the 99 Big 12 championship team, played from 99 to 2003, former IBAC kick returner and former Husker, Josh Davis, and part of the Day by Day documentary. Josh, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Great. How you doing?
We're doing all right. We are fighting through not having a full blasting AC, so I'm in a room that's typically like bone chilling, and I'm trying not to sweat too much. So hopefully you're in an air-conditioned room or car compared to us.
Oh, yeah. You're in a good place. You need to suck it up there is what you need to do.
That's right.
You guys are practicing out there in that heat, banging heads. That's real heat.
That's right. That's right. Maybe we should go
take
day,
the show outside.
Yeah, yeah. A day with the Huskers. We're just going to go and throw the pads on, right?
Yeah, it'd be probably pretty entertaining.
Josh, a part of this day-by-day documentary, we'll get into that here in just a moment, but one thing I wanted to touch on is one thing that jumped out. I was reading your little biography. The only father-son duo to both rush for 140 yards in a single game. And everyone, what I'm tying that into is, you know, Nebraska football is this brotherhood. It's a family. You know, what did you take away from that brotherhood as well as getting to play at the same university as your dad?
Well, it's like I've had this conversation many times with a lot of different players or people, but I played with a lot of guys where their dads played there, their brothers played there, uncles. So there's a lot of legacy families that played at that university, and I think you guys know how special it is to play there. And you know, all the players I did, they took a lot of pride in making sure that they really showed out well for their families while they were there. So it's definitely something that I'm real proud of. I got two brothers that would have loved to play there and just didn't work out for them. And I was able to have a pretty good career and can look back on it with my dad. And we always have a lot of things to talk about. And it's a great thing.
Being part of that 99 championship team, as we know that that's the last one they won. There have been times that they've been close. Nebraska has been. But what kind of moment was that like in 99, beating Texas for the Big 12 title?
To be honest with you, that was my redshirt freshman year.
Right.
And me and Deontay Grixby, you might know him, but we were the scout team backs for the number one defense. And so going into that game, we were both playing Hodges Mitchell. And so we would run all the plays that Texas ran and really give our defense a good look so that when they got ready for that game and then the defense, you know, played really well, I guess me and Deontay felt we did a pretty good job of what we did. Same with the offensive line and quarterbacks and just giving our defense a good look. We had a tremendous defense that year. And that Big 12 championship, they really rebounded because I don't know if you know, a lot of these fans probably remember, you know, we lost by, I believe it was, 2 or 3 points at Texas earlier in the season. And that was actually the one game where if we would have beat them in Texas, we would have been playing Florida State in the national championship game. So I know those guys came in there with a chip on their shoulder and they really shut Texas down. But me and Deontay, we had a lot to do with that as playing backs and sort of the rest of the scout team offense and watching those guys go out there and play well and win a championship. It was an awesome feeling.
Josh Davis with us on Hail Varsity Radio on a Monday. Josh, we have you on the show to talk about this new documentary that you're working on, Day by Day. Can you let the people out there know what this documentary is about, when it's coming out, and what kind of the inspiration was behind it?
Yeah, I mean, this documentary is a story that's never really been told. You see a lot of the U documentary that they do for the 30 for 30, the Trojans. This is going to be the Nebraska documentary from the 90s, and it'll be really distributed at a very high level in the same kind of way. And so it's going to be going over all the stories that maybe a lot of Husker fans probably have never heard, getting some of these behind-the-scenes perspective from coaches to players to coaches from opposing teams, your Bobby Bowdens, your Peyton Mannings. You know, there's a lot of people that came together to make this project what it is, and it's still an ongoing project right now that the filming and the production is still taking place. So I don't want to go into it too much and give away too much, but it's going to be a tremendous story.
Josh, thinking about the atmosphere of the blur parties that September 6th, September 7th, as the blur parties take their show to Colorado, the streets are going to be blocked off. I mean, it is going to be what they hope, a sea of red that Boulder, Colorado very much does not want. How important and how unique of a
experience is it to literally block off a street in Boulder for the Huskers?
Oh, it'll be fantastic. Blur Parties, as you mentioned, they did a really fantastic job putting this event on. For those fans out there or public that are interested in seeing this behind-the-scenes look at this documentary day-by-day that's coming out, go to blurparties.com, and you can actually purchase your tickets there. But what's unique about this is a lot of different documentaries and stories that have been made. This is going to be one where you can actually see the behind-the-scenes of it prior to the documentary actually releasing. And you get to have a Q&A with the producer, the lead producer, Justin LaPera, who's a fantastic sports producer, and you'll have other players there. Your Tommy Frazier, Amon Green, Jared Tomich, Aaron Graham, Troy Dumas, and many more will be at this event. And so it's definitely something you don't want to miss.
Josh Davis with us on Hail Varsity Radio, talking about the day-by-day documentary as well as the Blur Parties. Josh, being from Loveland, Colorado, it's kind of a not so much a return to the hometown as much as return to the home state. What kind of atmosphere are you expecting? I know we talked about blocking off the streets, but obviously Colorado trying to combat even tickets going out to Husker fans. I mean, just what do you expect the atmosphere as a former player and as Nebraska gets to go to Colorado for the first time and at what feels like forever?
I think it's going to be great. You know, I think the atmosphere last year in Lincoln for this particular game was very exciting. There was a lot of high hopes. You didn't really know what to expect with Scott taking over at the helm. Adrian Martinez, a freshman quarterback, and I was actually up in Larry the Cable Guy skybox watching it, so it was kind of gut-wrenching game at the end there. Hoping we could have pulled it out, but you know, it didn't go our way. I think this year these guys are going to be more prepared. It's going to be an unbelievable electric atmosphere, and for folks that are Husker fans, I think they're going to be really excited about this, and the folks that are Boulder fans, I think they're not going to be prepared for the sea of red that's about to come into their stadium there.
Now, Josh, as you mentioned, you are going to be putting on a little pre-screening of this documentary during this weekend at Colorado. That's going to be on the Friday night before the game. Can you kind of walk us through the production process that you went through for the documentary?
Yeah, I mean, when if you look at it, I was just one of the cogs that came through to help make this happen. Myself, a great friend, Mark Brungardt, who I played with at Nebraska, and an even greater friend, and Justin LaPera, the lead producer, who I've known since we were in sixth grade together. We all kind of came together and played our different roles within trying to help facilitate this. It kind of sprung from the alumni cap. So if folks that don't know, go to alumnicap.com, where we've been making career achievement plaques for former football letter winners and moving on to other sports now. But that's kind of what set it off was starting that and then reconnecting with Justin in order to do Alumni Cap Project, do some filming there, and then discussing this documentary that, like we said, you know, this should have been told a long time ago, and I'm just happy to be a part of it in some way to be able to help put it together.
Now, I don't want you to spoil the documentary for anyone out there, but can you give us a taste of what we might see in this documentary, any of the behind-the-scenes stories that we might be hearing about as we watch it?
I got to be careful with that. You know, you might get me in trouble here. I can just tell you, you know, there's going to be some stories that I guarantee Husker fans have not heard before, just because a lot of the players that we've interviewed or even coaches for that matter have, you know, disclosed the fact that they haven't talked about that, or this is something that the fans will be excited about. I think once you get into documentaries like this, it's not a all the time just like a highlight reel like you would see for a team that just wins and wins. Nebraska has lots of those. This gets a lot more into the depth of the minds of these players and what they were thinking and what they were going through at the time when they were on that historic run in the 90s. So, I mean, the stories are incredible. They're stories that'll make you laugh, stories that'll make you cry, stories that are going to inspire. It's going to be something that you're just not going to want to miss. And, you know, for fans out there that will be in Boulder, on Friday. It's going to be September 6th at the Embassy Suites. It's going to take place from 6 o'clock until 10 o'clock that night. You got to go to blurparties.com and get your tickets, because I can tell you they're going fast, and it's going to be an electric event.
Josh Davis with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Josh, we'll get you out on this. While the game may not have gone Nebraska's way, you did have the chance to play in a BCS national title game against Miami, as well as having a record for kick return yards. What was it like playing in the Rose Bowl and playing at that stage?
I think playing in a national championship game, it's almost what you dream about when you're a young kid. You know, always to get to that pinnacle. And there's a lot of great players that have never got to experience that. And I feel very blessed the fact that, you know, I was one of those guys that not only got to experience it, but got to start in that game and actually return the opening kickoff in a national championship game. It was, you know, we played probably one of the best teams that you could see on paper for the NFL. They were outstanding, and I actually ended up playing with a number of those guys from that Miami team at the New York Jets under Herm Edwards, your Jonathan Vilmas and the Weaver twins. There was actually made a lot of good friendships with those guys years later when I was on that team. But, you know, there's nothing like playing in that game, and I'm excited for Nebraska to try to work its way back into getting into that position again. I know, you know, with Scott at the helm, that gives us the best opportunity to do that, especially with his assistant coaches. I know Barrett Rood very well. I played with him. He's a great coach. Greg Austin, I played with Greg as well. I mean, just the whole staff there. Kenny Wellhite, Brendan Stye, the player development, Coach Ron Brown. These are top-notch guys, and I'm excited to see where the program goes in year two.
Former Husker I-back and kick returner with us, Josh Davis. Go to Blur Parties, get your tickets to go out to Colorado, as well as the Behind the Scenes with Day by Day documentary. Josh, we look forward to hearing more about it. We appreciate you joining the show, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your week and enjoy that weekend with Blur Parties.
Absolutely, and I look forward to seeing all the fans out there. And go Big Red. I'm excited for this season, and thank you guys for having us on, and you guys have a great day.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, Chris at HaleVarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Big thanks to Josh Davis. Find more information about the day-by-day documentary at BlurParties.com. Get tickets. Find out how you can see that documentary, as well as we will have Josh Davis's interview online soon. Stay tuned for the rest of the week. We will have more players that have been involved with the documentary and will be out with Blur Parties that weekend, the rest of this week. Colton alongside Elijah Herbal. Find us, follow us on Twitter at @2birds1stone, at Herbal Essences. If you're really going to make a move in 2019, give the real estate professionals at West Blue Realty a call today. Specializing in residential home sales in Lincoln and surrounding communities, they will help you make your next move a smooth one. For a limited time, mention Hail Varsity, and West Blue Realty will provide you with up to $1,000 upon the closing of your next home purchase. Call Tom Luby at 402-540-3768 or Kelly Hofsteiner at 402-202-2312 for more details. WestBlueRealty.com as well. Find them at 233 South 13th Street at the 11th floor. It pays to work with West Blue. What can West Blue do for you?
Let me tell you what, my dad, he's a home builder, and it's a good time to buy a home. If you're out there on the fence, it's a good time to buy a home. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, that's a good building joke, on the fence. I like it. So something I wanted to talk about, if this thing has to leak into the next segment, it will. But the top 50 players had been released by ESPN. ESPN's top 50 players, it is, for college football. Number 30 is Adrian Martinez, and already so I went to the top players and the snubs, or, you know, who's too high, who's too low. One of the ESPN writers, I believe it is, let me make sure I get his first name correct, Kyle Bonagura, said that and Justin Fields is at number 49. So let me go through the list real quick of players that Nebraska will face. They face seven of them. So at number six, you have Jonathan Taylor, Wisconsin. Number nine, Chase Young, Ohio State. 12 is Rondale Moore with Purdue. 18 is LaVisca Chenault, Colorado.
35, J.K. Dobbins, Ohio State. 41 is A.J. Epinesa with Iowa. And 49 is Justin Fields, Ohio State. There are also four other Big Ten players on that list that Nebraska would potentially face in a Big Ten title game that they will not face throughout the year. But 26 was Shea Patterson. Joe Bocci makes that list. One other Michigan State player and one Penn State player. So a total of, let me do quick math here, 12 guys from the Big Ten on that list. But so Martinez being in at 30, I don't think that's unreasonable, maybe a little high. So I kind of see where Kyle Bonaguer is coming from. This is he the 30th best player? Maybe not, but depending on the season he has, could he finish in that top 30? I think so. I think that's a reasonable number. I'm not going to sit here and say that I can't find, you know, 30 guys better than Adrian Martinez at this very moment, but when you consider him probably a top 5 to 8 quarterback in the country, and if he's not in that first tier of quarterbacks, he's in that very, you know, the very good tier 2 quarterbacks. So I don't think it's that unreasonable. Maybe it's because of who's in front of him, maybe it's who's behind him, but number 30 based on what he means to Nebraska, I think is fair.
The one thing I'm noticing about this list is it's very offensive-powered.
Oh, yeah.
Very offensive, overpowered, and very weak on offensive line play.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just based on the profiles of the players on this list, Adrian Martinez being 30, probably about right. But I think if you throw in the non-skill position players, a lot more offensive linemen, some great tight ends who aren't going to get the big names, they're not going to make lists like this, but just compared to the other players at their position, they're probably a top 50 player in the country. I think it's high, but just based on where this list is coming from a media mm-hmm. writer, probably doesn't know all the offensive linemen. 30 seems fair to me.
Yeah, looking, and I agree, looking through the list, it's almost like the 50, I don't want to say flashiest players, but 50, like, noteworthy, maybe not best college football players, but 50, like, these guys are important to the team that they play on. And I think what's really interesting to your point is we, you know, sometimes people forget how important offensive linemen are in order for a guy like Rondale Moore to succeed or a guy like Jonathan Taylor to succeed. Because think about this, who has one of the best offensive lines in the country? It's Wisconsin. So that's why Jonathan Taylor is number 6. Now, I'm sure that probably goes into some of the factors who's around him too. But what's interesting is when you think of skill players for offense, you think of quarterback. I mean, you don't think of, they are, but the quarterback, running back, wide receivers, right? When you think of skill players for the defense, it's almost strictly the defensive line because that's where the most havoc is going to start. Mm-hmm. And then you know, you get a couple linebackers. So going through this list, it's a lot of quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, and a lot of defensive linemen. So it's a good mix. I'm not going to say it's not, but I think it's more of the 50 guys that will have the most impact on their team in college football versus you are the X number best player in the country.
In the top 30, there's one offensive lineman. It's offensive tackle Andrew Thomas at Georgia. I think Tyler Biadasz, center from Wisconsin, I think he's snubbed off this list. Probably the best offensive lineman in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I think so.
And one of the best offensive linemen in the country. He didn't even make top 50. So I think he got snubbed a little bit. Generally speaking, linemen tend to get snubbed on lists like this. I'm not all that surprised. Are there any surprises you think maybe these guys should be higher, looking lower at the list?
So the same guy that says that Adrian Martinez is high has Justin Fields being low, Kyle Bonaguer once again. And
he hasn't played a game.
That's my point.
You can't call him low if he hasn't played a game.
Right. It's one thing to say that, okay, well, and it may, is he at 48 or 49? He's at 49. Yeah, right. He hasn't played a game yet. That's kind of the issue with that situation, right? So, you know, we can sit here and say that, yeah, Martinez is probably high, but for the list that he's put into, that it's been built, 30's probably, I could see, I mean, he's got to be between 30 and 40.
We should clarify with all the offseason news surrounding Nebraska. We're not saying Adrian Martinez is high. We're saying he's high on the list.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. Sorry to clarify there. But, yeah, I mean, Fields hasn't played. So, you know, looking at some of the other guys, like some of the names don't really jump out to me as like, I know who that is. And I think that's kind of the trick with some of these lists sometimes is they aren't always the most notable guys, but they're guys that may be geared up for a good season, I think. One guy, and you know, maybe they wrote this part just for me, but two guys agreed with this. Unranked players that need to be on the list, Eno Benjamin for Arizona State. He's their running back.
Mm-hmm.
Over 1,600 yards is a single-season record. Had 300 carries, had 900-yard performances, 94 missed tackles, and 47 runs of 10 yards or longer, which was fourth in the country. And those missed tackles were third in the country. So, I mean, again, it's one of those that is it – it's the same debate you have with the MVP. Are you the best player on the best team, or are you the best player? And I think this is kind of a list of guys that will be notable for their team rather than the best 50 in the country.
One last quick note. Chase Young, defensive lineman. He kind of plays everywhere for Ohio State. He is the top defensive player on the list, coming at number 9. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a big matchup to watch as we go into that Ohio State week, how he can pass rush and stuff like that against those Nebraska offensive linemen.
When we come back, we might touch on who the Huskers do face and a little bit of NBA news. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time on a Monday, Colton Stone alongside Elijah Herbal. Find us, follow us on Twitter at @2birds1stone, at Herbal Essences, and always follow at Hail Varsity. Quick thought before we get to this tweet from Wyatt. I wanted to touch on it just really quick, but the Rich Paul rule, no longer a Rich Paul rule. The NCAA enacted that to be an NBA agent, you had to have a bachelor's degree, a four-year degree. And today, after an article that Rich Paul wrote in The Athletic, but behind, you know, some people may not like him, but behind the power of one guy that proclaimed himself as the king, LeBron James, has now flipped that rule to now NBA agents don't need a four-year degree. So I don't think it's that big of a deal, but at the same time, it kind of just shows the power that Rich Paul has and that the players that he it works with
have. I mean, I don't have a bachelor's degree, and I'm still talking about Nebraska football, so I think you don't need a bachelor's degree to represent somebody. It's different.
I do have a bachelor's degree, so I feel like
yeah,
I,
how does it feel?
I'm qualified. I think that's what it is.
Tell me, is the bachelor's degree all worth all the work? Is it worth it?
Just pass your classes, man. That's all I gotta say. You know,
good non-answer.
The piece of paper is the same. Anyways, this question from Wyatt, it's interesting because I hadn't really put much thought into it, and I'm trying to even remember where it was the last time. But
when USC came to town, you can phrase the question first.
I was just saying, if College Game Day were to come to Lincoln against Ohio State, where would it be, and how many people would show up? Wyatt saying at least 15,000. So thank you for the question, Wyatt. But I'm trying to think of where they set it up for USC.
For USC, it was on the 50-yard line. It was in the stadium.
Okay.
They did it on the field on the 50-yard line, and they had all the fans back in West Stadium behind it.
Okay.
Lined up behind it. I don't think they do it again there.
My thought, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I immediately, this is the first place I thought of, is what if they did it like at Haymarket?
Hmm.
Like what if they did it on, like, at the baseball field? Not because you know, that's the better venue. Because if you can do it at Memorial, of course, like, do it in there. I just think that, like, if they found a way to make that work, that there's plenty of space to put people out there.
I personally think the logical place now is with that East Stadium renovation they did in that little parking lot in front of Morrill Hall.
Mm.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
There? And you got the new part of the stadium right behind it that they could have the camera shot of. I think that'd be a really good location for it. But the question is, there's how many people can you fit in there? Probably a lot.
Yeah. That's the tricky part, and that's why his question makes sense, is you have to find somewhere. Now, I know this is totally speculation because we don't know if they're going to be here or not, but you have to find somewhere that fits enough people, one, that it appears full, but two, that people can actually go, right? And two, it's a matter of you can't really put it out any close, like, outside the stadium, because then you're blocking the streets, mm-hmm. you're blocking some of the parking lots, people have permits to park there. So I don't know where they would put it. Maybe they would have to put it inside. I don't know. But that'd be kind of a quick turnaround to get them off the field. And, well, depending on
when,
the
time
of the game.
Is.
Yeah, if it's an 11 o'clock game, game day's probably not here. But
I don't know. That's an interesting question. I think a lot of people would show up. I think the number depends on where they have it.
Weather, where they have it, stuff like that. But I think it'd be safe to assume 10,000 people. I don't think it would be that hard for Nebraska fans who are we're all yearning for college game day.
They probably can't get 90 in there, but maybe maybe they would try.
I mean, they filled up most of West Stadium last time it was here, if you remember.
Yeah. So, I went to that game, so maybe college game day wouldn't provide such a heartbreak as it did the last
time. I still remember when we had college game day last time, I missed it because of flag football practice, and that was so dumb of me.
All right, we're back tomorrow. Hail Varsity Radio. Schmidt should be back as well. Find us, follow us on Twitter. Thanks for listening.